Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about my favorite nutrition program, Champion Athletes. As an athlete, whether at the middle school, high school, collegiate, or professional level, you have special nutritional needs, and these vary depending on your sport and energy requirements. Nutrition and ideal body composition play an essential role in achieving your performance goals and maximizing your success. At Champion Athletes, certified experts in sports nutrition develop individualized plans for the student, amateur, and professional athlete. Their sports nutrition programs will optimize your diet and nutrition so that you can achieve your ideal body composition and maximize your performance. Here's what I love. Each program is tailored to meet your specific needs through a comprehensive assessment, continuous reevaluation, and one-on-one coaching. So whether you're just starting out, maybe you're an amateur athlete, or you have elite status, the Champion Athlete Sports Nutrition Programs will help you reach your maximum potential. Programs are available nationwide. And for us, if you are a listener of Coach P's Perspective, you'll receive a $50 discount for the initial program if you use the code COACHP. Their website is champions-athletes.com. So be sure to check out the website. You can also look at their Instagram page, which is at championathletes. I'll have those links in the show notes. Go check out my friends at Champion Athletes to get your nutrition right, to reach your maximum potential and performance. If today's message motivates you, inspires you, moves you into action, then please share this with somebody via social media, text, whatever works for you. You could also give us a rating or review on iTunes. And last but not least, be sure to check out my book, Game Changing Moves, Life Lessons from the Locker Room and Beyond. You can pick it up right now on Amazon or go to my publisher, crosstrainingpublishing.com. All right, y'all, let's jump into today's episode. All right, hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. I am pumped. I have a legend on with us today, Coach Chris Bono, who is the head wrestling coach for the Wisconsin Badgers. Let me go through his background a little bit for those outside the wrestling world that don't really know. Three-time All-American, national champion, U.S. freestyle champion. He's been the head coach for University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, South Dakota State, and then now up at Wisconsin. And again, sort of a living legend in the sport of wrestling, known for being strong, intense, and highly inspirational. So Coach Bono, thanks for being on.
Hey, thanks for having me. You gave a good intro there. I don't know if I'm worthy of all that, but that's I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you've earned every bit of that, so. All right, well, let's do this, man. Let's just start out, you know, where'd you grow up at? Maybe your background in wrestling, how you got into the sport. Let's just start there.
That's a long time ago, but I spent, a lot of people don't know this, but I spent my first couple of years in Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia area, where I got into some Pop Warner wrestling. So I just basically followed my brother. My brother brought home a certificate or a note in his backpack that said wrestling signups or Monday night. And my parents went and signed him up. I tagged along. And, you know, I was too young at the time, they said. And then, you know, the next thing you know, my dad left me there to watch. And when he came back, I was out there wrestling. And coach looked at him and said, hey, give me $5 more and we'll sign the little guy up. And I guess the rest, you know, 42 years later, that was the moment that started me off in this long journey.
That's awesome. So where did you go to high school at, and what was your high school wrestling background there?
Yeah, so we moved to Florida. This is actually kind of pretty cool. We moved to Florida in Jacksonville when I was in fifth or sixth grade. And back then there was really no wrestling. There's no junior high stuff. There was no You know, nothing like today, right? No clubs or anything like that. Lucky enough that I was somehow able to practice with the high school that my brother was going to. So my mom would drive me 45 minutes down and I'd work out with a bunch of high school kids as much as I could. And my season was just basically in the summer, all the freestyle stuff. So I didn't wrestle any folk style. They didn't have anything around there for my age group in Florida at that time. So it was pretty cool that I got to do all that, but I didn't wrestle much. I would have, but there's zero opportunities. And then in seventh grade, I went to a private school and I was able to wrestle in high school, the high school division. So I was able to, I went to the bowl school in Jacksonville, Florida. And I competed in high school in seventh grade and, you know, I took fourth in state. And you know, I guess that's, I spent the next, 6 years of my life at that high school competing.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, there are a few states that do that, but, you know, when I think about what a senior in high school looks like, what a seventh grader often looks like, it's crazy, like placing in state as a seventh grader.
And dude, I looked like that seventh grader, right? I was a skinny little 98 pound, you know, guy that I wanted to cut weight, right? I wanted to put my plastic suit on and go for a run like everybody else, and I never needed to, you know what I mean? So it was really cool, but I grew up a lot, right? You're hanging around people, you know, you're on a bus with seniors, and thankfully that I was taken in by those guys and, you know, not treated bad or anything like that. And it was one heck of an experience for me.
Yeah. All right. Now tell me about college wrestling, you know, how you made your college choice and then, so, you know, cause you had a great college career, then a little bit about your career there.
Yeah. You know, I had a really good high school career. And I could have gone to almost anywhere I wanted in the country. I took my five visits and decided to go to Iowa State. And it was, you know, it was the best decision, one of the best decisions I ever made in my life, you know. And luckily enough, Bobby Douglas was my head coach. And I think it was somebody that I needed, right? Because I was the kind of guy, and I still am, you know, I always respected my coaches. I always, whatever they said was right in my eyes, you know, and that's what I did. And, you know, basically Bobby told me, I went there and I was terrible, right? My freshman year, you know, I didn't make weight for my wrestle off. As a true freshman, got beaten the wrestle off, went to two open tournaments that year, went 0-4, right? At least I had two matches. I went 0-2, 0-2, you know, and then the next year, you know, I wound up moving up a weight class, getting in the lineup, and I only won 8 matches. I think I was 8-13, got beaten the pigtails of the NCAA tournament. And, you know, and I basically, you know, had to really, you know, figure out what I wanted to do. I'd call home every night and be like, I want to go back to Florida. I want to quit. You know, my old man would tell me it's a long walk home. You know, you got to figure it out. And so I did. I got with Bobby and said, hey, I want to be great. He said, well, this is what it's going to take. And he told me what I needed to do. And, you know, I think I surprised him. You know, he said, meet me every day, for, you know, at 6:45, bring a partner. And that man drilled me for two and a half hours, one technique a day for 2.5 hours. And, you know, basically yelled at me for 2.5 hours. And that was what I needed personally. You know, and it was amazing that, you know, you look back on it, took every day in the summer and, you know, just drilled me and it drilled the work ethic into my heart, my mind, you know, and I was brainwashed. I've got to do this to be great. And then, you know, all of a sudden it just started transpiring. You know, he told me I wasn't the best wrestler. You need to have another weapon in your toolbox that you need, and you can control your conditioning. You know, you can put that weapon in in your toolbox. So I ran, I lifted, I got in the best shape. In my mind, I had to be better shape than anybody in the country, you know? And so it just all started snowballing for me when I actually learned how to wrestle a little bit and got in better shape than anybody in the country and started eating right and doing things, you know, living the right lifestyle. And it was, again, it snowballed. And, you know, I thanked the man because he taught me how to work. He taught me how to wrestle. He taught me how to drill. And I wound up having a pretty decent career.
Yeah, that's crazy going. And a lot of times we just see success. We don't see the behind the scenes, right? What you had to do to get there. So going from, you know, 0-4 and then losing the pigtails to being a 3-time All-American national champion, that's crazy. It also made me think about, you know, a few years ago, the word grit became kind of like a hot word, right? And one of the things about grit, Angela Duckworth wrote a book about it, you know, but where they looked at people who were spelling bee champions and all these other successful people. But a lot of the things it took to be successful, to be great in various areas, weren't sexy. They weren't the things everybody wanted to do. It was drilling one technique for an hour and a half. It was something that, man, like, that's tough to do. You know, kids like, I just want to wrestle live. Like, no, we're going to drill. We're going to drill a lot, you know? So that's awesome to hear that. And to not only hear it, but to see, like, hey, it literally worked, how it transpired into true success for you.
And you know what, man, I like doing the dirty things, the ugly things, you know, the non-sexy things. I don't know what it is, you know, right? And I don't, you get into that thing, was it bred in me or did I work into doing that? But I actually, you know, at the end of practice, I love doing the sprints. You know what I mean? At the end of practice, I love doing something extra. You know, I love sweating, you know, through three shirts, you know? So it's really cool, right? That's why I think I love wrestling.
At what point during your wrestling career, because you went on to have an international career as well, but at what point did you decide, I want to be a coach, I think coaching is my call, and I want to stay in the sport of wrestling?
Well, I was going to school to be a teacher. You know, I was going to go back home and, you know, be a high school teacher and do all that good stuff. And, you know, really, I started having some success. And that's when coach started talking to me about, hey, you probably need to stick around. You got a chance to go be world Olympic champion. And I never really thought about that, you know, and I was like, wow. But you looked in our room, right? We had guys, you know, we were the Iowa State room back in the day was tougher than crap, right? We had a bunch of post grads. We had people winning medals, you know, Eric Aiken was competing on the scene. And so it was like, well, I want to do that. And luckily enough, Bobby gave me the opportunity and said, hey, we've got a coaching opening, you know? So it wasn't like I wanted to coach right away. It was, this is how you're going to go win a gold medal. I'm going to give you the opportunity to coach. It's going to pay your salary and you're going to go win medals. And that was my job, you know, as an assistant coach. And I've done a lot of these podcasts and people always say, you know, do you have some regrets or, you know, this, I'll tell you one regret I had was I didn't learn how to be a coach until about 3-4 years into being a coach. Cause my only role was to go wrestle and win world championships, go win medals. That was my job. And Bobby told me that, you know, so I didn't do a whole bunch of office work. I didn't do a whole bunch of recruiting. I didn't learn the CEO side of things. I wrestled, I trained, I traveled the world, and that was my role. And, you know, so I would tell you, man, it wasn't about 3-4 years into actually coaching. Did I really think I could have a future in this coaching world?
It's funny you say that because, you know, I grew up, my dad's a Hall of Fame wrestling coach down in Oklahoma, and I grew up in the sport, going to camps and clinics and things like that. And sometimes you would see, we were close to Oklahoma State. So sometimes you would see an O-State wrestler who's maybe a national champion and he'd be teaching at a camp and he was terrible at it, right? He was a great wrestler, but he had no idea how to teach what he was doing. So there's that side of coaching, actually being able to teach the technique, things like that. But then, like you said, the CEO side, I know whenever I was an assistant coach, it was awesome. I would just go in, I would wrestle with the guys every day. I'd do the conditioning with them, and you know, you have a couple guys that you really work with, and then all of a sudden you become the head coach, and there's a whole lot more to it, man. There's a lot of behind the scenes that you literally have to learn along the way.
And that's what it's come to now, right? This is, you better know how to run a company. You better know how to run an organization if you want to be a head coach in today's day and age, right? Fundraising is very, very important. You've got these RTCs. You better know how to go talk to a corporation to go raise those money. You better be able to learn how to speak in front of people. You better, you know, if not, it's going to be very hard to raise money. It's going to be very hard to be able to communicate. And all those skills, you know, you learn along the way. You know what I mean? You learn how to deal with people. You learn how to, you know, sit meetings. You learn, you know, how to play your part at the university. You know, that's a big deal too. What's your role in the university? You know, where does wrestling sit? You better know your role and you better know how to, you know, expand it or whatever. But again, teaching the technique, right? Again, Bobby took me all over with him when in college, you know, I went anytime he offered me a camp, I went with him and I sat and watched how he teached. Right. So I was trying to learn. And I think in that process, you know, he would break things down to step one, step two, step three, and then go drill. Hey, we're drilling step one. This is how you, and that's how I learned how to teach. Everything for me was in steps. Step one, you know, you're going to grab the guy. Step two, you're going to put your hands here. Step three, you're going to attack. And it broke it down so basic. And, you know, that's where I started to learn how to, you know, and actually I learned how to wrestle that way. You know what I mean? In steps. You know what I mean? I know ground. All right. I mean, obviously it speeds up in a match, right? It's not step one, step two, but I knew step one was grabbing the wrist. Step two, I could penetrate. And it was, you know, again, I learned how to teach that way. And then it also taught me really to learn that way.
Yeah. And you know, you become an even better wrestler once you become a coach, because as you're teaching it and drilling it, then you start to think of it a little bit different. And so it translates over.
Yeah. And then you get even better when you can put your little spin on it, right? When you've done it a million times in matches, you're like, you know, this is good, coach, but look at me. What do you think of this? Hey, that's great too. And now all of a sudden you're developing your own little, you know, single leg. You know, Bobby shows you the fundamentals, but you're able to get there. And that's what I really love about coaching, is when you grab a kid, like, here's your single leg. And they're like, well, I like to, you know, this is, you know, not in camps. In camps, that drives you crazy, right? This way I do it. But when you've got your kids and you're in the room and you're like, you know, I like my hand here, but I also like it here. And then you get in there and figure out how to do it the way he likes it. And it, you know, that's, you know, it really makes him feel good about a single leg. And so it's really cool like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Then he gets to develop his own style and his own system.
That's right. Exactly right.
Yep. Now, who have been a couple of the greatest, you know, of course, Coach Douglas, but the greatest coaching mentors for you, and not just technique wise, but maybe mindset, maybe learning how to be the CEO of a program? Who have been some of your mentors?
You know, I'll tell you what, you know, Bobby's been my guy, right? You know, that's really, you know, all I've really worked under. You know, I worked under Kevin Jackson for, you know, about 8 or 10 months, whatever it was. But Bobby was my guy. And then I got out of wrestling a little bit, right? And I worked with Coit Cooper. I know that name sounds familiar. He's not a coach or anything, but when I went to the Leadership Academy with the NWCA, I worked with him and I listened and I studied. He really had a big influence on me on how to be a CEO, on how to market your program, right? That's another whole nother deal. You know, people say you're on social media too much, you're doing this. Listen, our sport A needs it, and B, right? Again, the CEO type stuff, your athletic director is going to love if you can put 5,000 people in your arena. Well, guess who's got to do that? Guess who's got to bring those ideas to the marketing department? Guess who's got to, right? We know the wrestling crowd, but so Coit Cooper was my guy. He taught me, you know, how to market my program and how to do things like that. And then when you look, I've been around a lot of great people. When I made world teams and I traveled the world, that took me all overseas. And, you know, you're at the Olympic Training Center. I would tell you more so than coaches were the athletes I was actually traveling with for all those. You know, I wrestled a long, long time. And those athletes that I traveled with overseas really had a big input. And I can't pick out one guy, because it was one guy gave me this. I bet you 40 or 50 different people had really helped me on, you know, my mental game, my technique, you know, all that good stuff. How to make weight, how do you do it? You know, you pick their brains. And so they really had a big influence on me as well.
I'm glad you brought up Coit. You know, that years ago, he worked with the NWCA, and then they had a national competition and basically promoting your program. You know, they had it for college level, high school level. And, you know, so you're getting on social media, and I'm competitive. So, you know, we really jumped levels in our promotion of our program on social media.
Hey, we won the award twice.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did too. My high school did. So yeah. We had to be able to do that. What are some of the things, and you mentioned that we need it in our sport, right? And today, thankfully, if someone's trying to make the U.S. team, they can get sponsors. They can actually make a living, don't have to live out of their car and eat tuna fish, you know. But what are some of the things, let's say, like at the, you know, Division I level, or college wrestling in general, how can we promote the sport better? What are some of the things that you guys do?
Well, I think we have to be able to promote the sports, right? The top programs, winning promotes the sport.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're putting thousands of people in the stand. Winning promotes the sport, right? You want to promote the sport, go win. Number one. Okay. Number two is you got to be accessible. You know what I mean? People ask you to do a podcast, go do the podcast. Let your fans see you. Let them understand. Right. And then really relationships are a big deal. You know, there's a lot of people out there that don't know me. Okay. Right. And have a misunderstanding of me because they never got to take the time to know me. Right. So going out and establish relationships within your community, making sure that they understand you and you get to know them. That's been a real big thing for me. Whenever we get out in the community, whenever we establish these relationships, friends, right? I'm bringing people to this match on that we have on Monday night. Never have seen a wrestling match. They're coming because I've developed a relationship with them, you know, outside of wrestling. And they're coming to support me and support our program. You know, there's just, you got to market your guys. You know, you got to promote them on social media. You got to get them in front of the camera after matches doing press conferences. You got to get them before the matches doing press conferences. You got to get them. People want to support people. People won't just come support a program just for the sake of it. You know, hey, it's Wisconsin wrestling. They're in town. I don't know anybody. I don't want to go. It's cold, right? But hey, I know Braxton Amos. You know what I mean? I saw a great fight. I want my kid to get his autograph. You know, let me go. And things like that start to snowball. But it all starts with accessibility. You know what I mean? You got to, in our sport, we can't be hermits. We can't sit behind the desk and be like, I don't want to do that interview. I don't want to, oh, I'm too good for that guy. I'm this, I'm that. Go out, do your interviews. Go out, get on podcasts. Go out and be in your community. You know, don't say no to any speaking engagements. People will respond to that.
I like the wording you use. People will support people, right? They might like your program, but they're going to come when they actually know somebody that's participating in the program. That's big. That's awesome. So that kind of leads me to my next question. How do you guys make yourself valuable to the university, right? Because we see sports programs, wrestling programs being dropped at various places or whatever. How do you, at Wisconsin, how do you guys make wrestling an important part of the university?
Well, the first thing is you got to follow the rules, right? You don't follow the rules, you're going to be gone, and so is your program, right? So you got to follow NCAA rules, you got to follow school rules, you got to follow all that, right? The next thing I tell you is you got to know your role within the university. You know what I mean? We, you know, I think everybody knows this place is known for football. You know what I mean? I'm not going to walk in there and say, give me everything football's got, right? They're going to laugh at me. You know what I mean? Football is our, you know, and COVID shows that football's our revenue generating thing here. Yeah. Know your role where you are. I know too many people that will badmouth their football programs. Oh, they get this, they get that. And you know what? They deserve it. They support our program. Give them what they want. Give them what they need. I love it. All right. I support our program. I love it. You know, be valuable. You know, be valuable. Do what you have to do around the university. You know, like I love it when they ask me, hey guys, we need volunteers to go do this or that. I sign up first. I'm like, no, I wasn't talking about head coaches, right? I was talking about, you know, some director of ops or that. No, I'll go sit in the concession stand and sell hot dogs if we have a shortage of staff. I'll go collect tickets, right? Be valuable, you know. And then of course you gotta win. You know, if you're not winning, that gives them an excuse to get rid of you. And that's, we are in a win and loss business, no matter what you say, no matter what sport you're in, no matter how much your budget is or how much money you're making. If you don't win, you shouldn't be in the job. That's just, that's the nature of, right? If you're selling peanuts and you can't sell peanuts, you shouldn't be in the job, right? I'm in a job. It's when we are evaluated on wins and losses. If I don't win, we should be gone. And that's what we chose to do. So you got to go win, right? To make yourself valuable. You got to go sell tickets. You got to put people in the stands, and you've got to, you know, do it with the right way, you know, and do it with integrity. And then of course you got to graduate your kids. You got to make your kids productive members of society. And that's, you know, obviously probably the most important thing. But you start putting kids out there where they should be, you know, life is good. Life is good all around.
Absolutely. What kind of athlete are you looking for? Whenever somebody is junior, senior in high school, they're thinking about wrestling in college. You guys are scouring the nation looking. What kind of athletes are you wanting to bring into Wisconsin?
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing we do is ask for their transcripts. That's the very first thing you do. You know, we've got a high academic standard here at Wisconsin, and that will get you, you know, put off the list first check, you know, is the academics. But what we do like in an athlete is I like someone that likes to compete.
Yeah.
You find someone that likes to compete, right? You're going to find somebody that's tough-minded, someone that'll run through the wall. You know what I mean? But you find someone that taking second is okay, right? They'll give up in a practice. They'll quit in a sprint. Right. So you got to go find that guy that wants to compete, that has a love for competing. And it's kind of neat. You can find that out so very quickly, right? You get out, even in the preseason, we're out there messing around with the football and somebody's trying to fight somebody because, you know, it was fourth down and they didn't think they got their feet in bounds when, you know, for a touchdown that makes the score, you know, 10 touchdowns to one touchdown. And like they didn't worry, and they want to fight the guy, right? That guy wants to compete. That guy loves to compete, you know? And I do like guys that like to compete, you know, and I like guys that love the sport, guys that want to sit in the office and watch video. I like guys that come in and be like, hey, I watched this match last night from 1988. What do you think? You know, that's the love of the sport. Just the love of what you do is very, very, it's very, very attracting. It's very, very, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but you can pass that down. Your teammates see that. Yeah. You know, it's very infectious, I guess I should say. You know, someone comes in to get the love of the sport, the passion, right? That rubs off on your guys. And when you bring 6, 7, 8, 9 guys like that, the other 25 guys have no choice but to follow that. And then all of a sudden it snowballs.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's that passion. Passion is contagious, man. You can't fake passion.
Amen.
Yeah. So, all right. If you're talking to some athletes, high school athletes, college athletes, whatever, knowing your career that you had and then what you've done and seen as a coach, just boiling it down to a couple of things, what are a couple of things you would tell an athlete? Hey, if you want to be successful, if you want to have an opportunity to achieve your goals, you need to be doing X, Y, and Z.
College kids, like once they're in my program, you know, what we tell them is time management, first of all. You know, when you're in college, you want to be successful, you got to manage your time. You know, because you got to turn your, you know, today's day and age with this, everything's online, this, that, and that. Submit your papers by midnight on Tuesday. You can take a test up until midnight on Thursday. If you don't have good time management, you're going to forget about your papers. You're going to forget, right? Organization, you know, be organized. Be organized and understand time management. I get on our guys all the time because they'll be like, oh, I was meeting with our academic advisor. Like they show up practice 3 minutes late. I was meeting with my academic advisor. Listen. Before the meeting, you go in there and say, all right, I got this. I got a meeting. I got practice at 3, right? This meeting's going to be over at 2:45, right? You know what I mean? You've got to understand your time management. It's okay to, you know, put guidelines in when you go into that meeting. All right, I'm here from 2 to 2:45, right? And get out and get to practice, you know, things like that. So organization, you want to succeed in college, organization, you want, you know, time management, and then you want to succeed in college, right? There's a lot of vices here in college, right? You've got your social life. You've got, you know, things that are, you know, things you can control, but things that you want to be a normal college kid, you know, and you want to go to parties and you want to go drink and you want to do those things, right? You've got to manage that stuff. You know, there's a time and there's a place, right? You know, you've got to manage, you know, Friday night, we practice at 8:30 in the morning, Saturday. Are you going to go out till 3 a.m? Right. We talk about Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in our program as being championship days. That's where we win championships, not by wrestling, right? By how we live our Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Yeah. Are you using your Sunday on your off day to just lay in bed till 3 o'clock? Or are you getting up, going for a walk, right? Having breakfast and then maybe coming over and getting in the hot tub, cold tub and recovering, you know, and icing down your knee? Or are you laying there till 4 o'clock and being like, you know, maybe I'll go get a pizza and hang out and do this. So we talk about, how, you know, you approach your days. Are you a professional? Things like that. So outside of wrestling, lifting and all that, right? You got to live your championship days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You got to be able to have great time management and you got to be organized.
Excellent. Those are all pieces of wisdom right there. So that, that are valuable. And I can look back at my own career and know exactly how important those things are. And I can say when I was in college, one thing I didn't do well, I'd never slept in until 4 on Sundays, but we're so much better now at understanding recovery, right? When I was in college, back whenever you were in college, it was just grind, grind, grind all the time. And now like, hey, use those days, like you said, to get in the cold tub and the hot tub and, you know, get some foam rolling in and get some things like that to actually let your body recover, let your mind recover, knowing that when the better you do that, the better you actually walk out there and compete and practice the next day. And then you go in a real competition and compete. And so anyway, yeah, it's we've gotten so much more advanced in those areas, which is awesome to know. All right. 100 miler. Tell me about it. Okay. Coach Reeder talked about it and the experience that you guys had. So I want to hear your version of the story, you know, how you train for an ultra. A little bit of the experience.
I still don't know how to train for an ultra. I did. I don't know. I still don't know how to train. You know, when we first decided to do it, it was like, okay, we're going to we'd look at each other and we're like, all right, I'm gonna run 10 tomorrow. All right, we'll run 10. You know, and then it was kind of like, all right, I'm gonna, you know, run 10 tomorrow. I'm gonna run five. What's your off day? And we'd say, when's the off day? You know what I mean? All right, we're gonna run, you know, after the off day, we'll run 20. You know, and so that's how we basically planned it. You know, that's how we trained. And then it got to the point where it was like, we're just trying to get as many miles as we can per week and then see how it went. We were more concerned about our nutrition.
Yes.
So it was, you know, it was like, let's go run 25 miles or 20 miles, but let's bring, you know, how are we going to do a race day? Let's bring in our honey stingers or peanut butter and jelly. Let's go get a case of water and, you know, mix them up with our electrolytes. Let's see how we feel. And we felt that if we had our nutrition right, we could do it, right? We were not that we were cocky or arrogant, but we're like, dude, we're going to do it. We're going to finish, but let's make sure that our nutrition's good enough. Cause that's what I said. I said, there's no way we're getting pulled off out of this race unless we go down, like unless we can't walk, you know, we have a heart attack or, you know, we're cramping up that we got to get pulled out the race. So that's what the way our mentality was going into it.
While you're running the race, what were some of the things that, you know, you had to tell yourself to be motivated and keep going, or to motivate, you know, John when he's next to you? And like you said, at times he was hurting, times you were hurting.
Yeah. And I think I listened to it and he told a story. I think, I'm not sure. I don't want to repeat the same things on this podcast, but our battle cry, right? We had a guy, I don't know if he told this, if you will, I won't, you can, you know, let me know, but we had a guy when we were at South Dakota State, hurt his ankle. Okay. We went down to Oklahoma State when they were like the number two or three team in the country. And I was trying to change the culture there. And this kid was good to go. And you know, but he came out of the locker room like 30 minutes before the match. I said, how's your ankle feeling? He goes, it's about 80%. I said, you're done. You're not wrestling. Put the back up. You're going. And he looked at me like I was crazy, right? So then when we got back home that next day, I looked at him. I said, how's your ankle doing? He said, 100% perfect. Right? And I said, all right, that's the attitude we need, right? So on that race, every time that we were struggling, right, we were always checking in with each other. And you know, I'd look at John and be like, how you doing back there? And he'd be like, 100%, right? That's the only answer we were allowed to give. And you know what, man? That's how tough your mind is, because that was the only answer we gave. And when I heard that, I was like, all right, he's good. Let's keep going. So that was our mindset, you know, zero negativity. That we had no negative. Nothing negative we were going to talk about. You know what I mean? Nothing negative. It was, you know, how you feeling? Good. All right. When we get to the aid station, throw a bunch of Vaseline down your pants. Why are you doing all that? Hey, nope. I got a bunch of, you know, I got a bunch of chafing, but it wasn't going to be negative. How you feeling? 100%. Let's go. You know what I mean? And it just snowballed from there. So no negativity was our main battle cry. And you know, if you're hurt, get tough and get through it. That was about it.
Yeah. Cause that's big, man. No negativity. Let's just talk about carrying that over into everyday life. You know, life has ups, downs, whatever, but how do you carry that over?
So you know what, man? I just saw a quote, right? I just saw a quote that said, I'm going to get rid of all negativity in my life. When I'm late for something, I'm not going to walk in there and say, sorry, I'm late. That's negative. I'm going to walk in there and say, hey, thank you so much for waiting for me. You know what I mean? And so if you learn to start doing things like that, right? The negativity, everyone's going to experience, want to be negative. Everybody wants to be negative, right? Nobody wants to enjoy life. Everyone wants to blame somebody. Everybody wants to be negative about something. And you know what, in that race, it taught me a lot about that. We could have blamed everything, right? We could have blamed, you know, my underwear is too tight. My socks cut off my circulation. My knees are all swollen, right? We were blamed, but the bottom line was there was a start and there was a finish. And I was told to start here and I was told to finish here. And that's what I had to do. My knee was the size of it. I just had to, right? I mean, you got to do it, right? And the best part about all this was we asked ourselves in training, why, you know, why are we really doing this, right? And John said it the best. He was like, dude, we're doing it because it's hard. You know, we're going to do it because it's hard. And I was like, all right, great answer. I guess we're going to do it because, you know, because we really had no reason to do it. But it was something that it was hard. And that was our... And I remember him telling me one time I couldn't get over a curb. We came to a curb, right? The trail kind of went off a little bit and we came to a little curb. I couldn't get my leg over it, right? And I was trying to lift my leg up and he looked at me, goes, that's why we signed up. It's hard. I was like, oh yeah. And it got me enough motivation to get over that step. And man, there was probably 500 of those little exchanges between us like that.
Yeah.
When it was hard for one of us, but then one blurt of, dude, you signed up because it's hard, right? And now you're telling me to hang on. You're kind of, right? You got to slow down a little bit. Let's go. You know what I mean? And he's like, you're right. Let's go.
What is it about, and maybe it's just wrestlers, or lots of sports are tough, but our sports are tough. It just is. But what is it about maybe some intentional suffering and some, you know, shared suffering with somebody else that just kind of, it just motivates you, man, and teaches you so much about life. Why? Yeah.
I struggle with that, right? I get up every day and punish myself.
Yeah.
And the days I don't do it, right? This is bad. I don't know if I should be saying all this, but the days I don't do it, man, I feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I feel guilty, right? It doesn't have to do with anything about being, right? I'm not competing anymore. I'm not doing it, but I feel guilty if I don't get up and punish myself in the mornings, right? Why do you get up so early? Because I don't want to do it at 4 p.m. I'm not doing it at 5 p.m. I want to get up early. I want to punish myself in the morning, and then I want to start my day. You know what I mean? I get this from my wife, from my, you know, my parents used to say, well, you come, you know, you get home from work at 6 o'clock. Why don't you run your 10 miles at 7 p.m.? No, I'm getting right. I want to punish myself in the morning. And when I don't do it in the morning, right, I have some bad thoughts in my head throughout the rest of the day. Right. So I don't know. Right. That's kind of a bad side of me. But then when we started doing this stuff together, and it was a shared suffering, right? It was great because it was like, it was motivating. You know what I mean? It was more motivating when he was like, when he'd be like, we'd run 10, 15, 20 miles. He'd be like, dude, that was hard. I don't know if we're going to be, I'm like, I felt great. You know what I mean? It was like, all right, here's what we got to do. And it was, we planned together, but I'm probably not answering your question, but I think it goes back to our sport. You know, I think it goes back to, you know, one-on-one. If you suffer more than that guy you're going to compete against, right? In good ways, you know, not having a torn ACL and trying to wrestle and practice, right? I'm talking, if you suffer by running three more sprints, if you suffer by drilling 45 more minutes than anybody, if you suffer by doing all the right things, and if that's not suffering, right? Many people might say that's sacrifice, right? But I like the word suffering, you know, I like shared suffering. I like, individual suffering. I like that. Right. If suffering means all your boys are out, you know, partying on the town and you sit home and watch some Netflix, right? That's good suffering because it's going to pay off in the long run. And I really believe in that. And, you know, the shared suffering is our model. It works. You got a buddy with you. You share together and it brings you tighter. You know, our relationship grew from doing that together, you know, and it's an amazing, amazing feeling. Anyone listening, go find something you don't think you can do. And go do it, and you will be a different, it will change your life. It changed mine for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. You answered it perfect, coach. That was a great perspective. So, all right. I want to ask you, and don't be humble. What is your genius? I believe God's given everybody the, you know, gifts, right? Gifts and abilities to be able to use. And doesn't mean you don't have to work at them to get better at them, but everyone sort of has their own sort of genius. What would you consider yours?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I, you know, I mean, I think that I'm persistent, right? I think that like in that race, I think that when I have a goal, and I don't like to use the word goal, but when I have an end result that I have to achieve, I think that I've been gifted on being stubborn and bullheaded enough to, right? And that's hurt me in life too. You know what I mean? When the goal is maybe not one that you really should be stubborn and bullheaded about. It could hurt you, but I think that the gift I've been given is when there's an end result, I literally will try and die. I will die, you know, if that's what it takes to get it done, you know, and, you know, I'll do whatever the job tells me to do, mm-hmm. you know, and I won't stop until it gets done, you know, and that's a gift. And it's also a curse, you know, cause I think it, you know, in the training aspect, right. When's enough, enough, you know, for me, enough was never enough,
yeah.
You know, and I took a bunch of heat from it, but like you said, back in the day, I mean, even today's day and age, the way we rest these kids and the resources they get to recover and all that, I would have never used them. You know what I mean? I would have been like, whatever, steak, ice and water. That was my motto. That was my, how do you recover? I ate a steak, right? I drink some water and I put ice on my injury. I'm ready to go the next day. that's what I live by, you know, and I love it. Right. I still live by, I still tell these guys all that, you know, you want to feel good, go eat a steak, drink a bunch of water and put some ice on your injuries and you'll be ready to roll.
Yeah. And you know, that is a gift, man, because it takes consistency. It takes resilience, mental toughness. It takes all those things, you know, and then whenever you do that, that inspires other people to push themselves and want to do those things as well. So real quick, I don't want to slide past this. So you said you don't like to use the word goal. I'm not a big fan of the word goal either. I'm more desired out. Like we have a desired outcome. We're going to work to get there. Those type of things. So what was your,
I talk about dreams. I talk about dreams.
Okay.
You know, what are your dreams?
Yeah.
You know, what is the end result? What are you, what are you really, let's dream big, man. Right. I don't like goals. It's easy to say, I want to be a national champ. Right. It's easy to say, I want to be an All-American. But what's the bigger picture? What are we dreaming, right? I come in, I want to dream big. I want to dream. I want to take over the world. You know what I mean? I want to do it all, right? And that's what I like to do. But obviously, goals are very important. You know, I know that, right? And you know, little goals established. But I talk about the end result. You know, what are we? You know, what are we looking at? Bigger picture than just a goal, being a national champion, right? My dreams. You know, individually, you know, we're trying to be the best possible person I can, trying to do exactly what coach said, trying to take care of all my academic needs, right? It was just it wasn't one thing. It was the bigger picture of why am I in college? Why am I in this job? You know what I mean? I'm not here just to be a national champion coach, right? That's I would tell you that's a goal. You know what I mean? My dream here is to be the best possible mentor I can possibly be to these 35 kids I get every year, right? To see them accomplish everything, all their dreams and everything they want to do, right? And in that process, I want to win the NCAA championship. In that dream, I want to win the Big Ten championship. In that dream, I want 10 individual champions. You know, in that dream, I want to see my daughters graduate from University of Wisconsin. All those things, I think, you know, top will have in one goal or a list of goals, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. Very good. It's one of the reasons why, you know, my podcast is Coach P's Perspective. I have my perspective, but I want to bring in outside perspectives, right? Because that adds to my own personal perspective. Whenever I can hear yours, I can hear other people. I can learn from people who have done very well in the things I want to do well in. Right. And that's how we learn in life. So for you, what is your growth process? Because as leaders, we have to continue to grow, right? We don't want to be the ceiling or the lid for our program, for our company. What are some of the things that you do consistently to ramp up your personal growth?
Well, personal growth. I like to read now, right? I've gotten into reading a bunch. These books, I used to not be a reader. Mm-hmm. But some of these books I like to read, you know, give me it and what they've done, because I pick books, obviously I'm interested in, but it almost reinforces what I'm doing. You know, another thing I do is I get a lot of feedback. I am not afraid to ask anybody, you know, what do you think? You know what I mean? What do you think of me? Tell me the truth. Right. And that helps, you know, that helps. And because I've realized even the people, some people I work with, like, hey, you're not approachable. You know what I mean? What do you mean? I'm the nicest guy in the world, not approachable, but my persona comes off as I'm not going near that guy. Right. And I have to get better at. And I always, I had that the other day. I was talking to a coworker who sat down. What do you think? You know what I mean? Well, I would never approach you. Okay. Well, here's the deal. Here's what I used to them. I said, listen, I'm like a stray dog. Right. You see a stray dog tied up over there with a big chain on its neck, and you start to go near it. Right. And you look at it. Maybe it gives you a look like it's scared, or maybe look like maybe its teeth show. Right. But if you went back to that thing day after day, or you went over and gave it a little bit of food, and all of a sudden, right, you start petting it, and all of a sudden you take her home. 2 weeks later, this dog's sleeping in bed with you and rolling around with you and going on runs with you and right, and is loyal to you. And it's, man, I go, that's kind of the way I am, right? If you ever took the time to get to know me, right, instead of just blurting things out when you blatantly don't know who I am, right, or blatantly say I would never approach you, well, you've never gotten the chance to know me. You've only looked at me from a distance. You've only listened to maybe some outside people, or you've maybe listened to people that are not sure of themselves that come up and say, hey, my name is so-and-so. Nice to meet you. Hey, what's going on, buddy? Come here. You know what I mean? So I use that. I use that a lot, like to even my guys, right? Don't judge somebody over there. You know what I mean? Don't. And you know, I hear those guys say, that guy's an idiot. And I stop them. I'm saying, what makes him an idiot? Have you ever talked to him? No. So just because he's out there on a skateboard and you're not a skateboarder makes him a knucklehead. You know what I mean? So get it. I always tell him, get a chance to know him. And that's my thing too. I like to get to know people, get to know me. You know, you'll see that, you know, we in this thing are good people, right? I'm a good person. I try to be a good person. Do I have faults? No doubt about it. We all do. But we want to make sure, you know, we try to get to know people before we actually say them, judge them and things like that.
Yeah, that's very good advice. You know, I think some of that too is because I deal with the same thing. You know, you're short, you're muscular, you look intense. Right. You got cauliflower ears. I mean, you're a wrestler. Right. So I think sometimes people are like, that looks tough. And so makes them must not look approachable. I know that, you know, getting into some entrepreneurship and business a few years ago, one of the things I had to do was kind of learn how to smile a little bit because, because I mean, I might be in like the best mood in the world, but it might look mean to somebody else. Like, I wasn't mean to look mean. I was like, I was really happy. It just, my face is short, I guess. I had to like learn how to smile and be approachable a little bit, but. That's awesome. You know, made me think of my mom is like the nicest lady in the world and like one of the best people I know, but like if you, but she's also shy. So if you didn't know her, you might think she's like a mean person or whatever. Get to know her, like the best person ever. But yeah, so that's, I'm glad you brought that up because personas or the way people look sometimes or carry themselves, we can just instantly just judge without actually going and getting to know the person. And the bigger picture of life, man, relationships are so important.
And that's something I do when I give talks and I talk to kids at camp and all that. I tell them when you go to lunch at lunch, go find that person that's sitting by themselves.
Yeah.
And sit down with them and get to know them. I'm telling third graders, right? And I'm talking to CEOs and companies, right? How many times do you walk in and you got your 10 buddies, and you're all having a great time at lunch, and you look over and there's that one or two people that have nothing, they have nobody. You know, they could be the new person in school, or they could be the person that always got bullied, or they could be that. Go sit down next to them and get to know them, right? You never know what someone else is going through, and you never know what a simple hello, a hug, or something like that, that could actually make that guy's day or make that person's day and maybe turn their life around a little bit.
Absolutely. All right, I can't go past this. I mentioned a minute ago, you know, you're in great shape, you're muscled up, and you mentioned earlier about getting up early. What's the daily routine look like for you as far as fitness goes, nutrition goes, getting that reading time in? Like I would call these non-negotiable daily habits. What are some of the things that you do?
For me, non-negotiable is, you know, getting up early. You know, I'm a 4:15, you know, 4:15 guy, right? And I get a cup of coffee and I'm on the treadmill now, right? I'm into the running thing still. So my workouts consist of, you know, anywhere from 6 to 15 miles. You know, on the treadmill just about every day. You know, and again, all that, right? I'm traveling, all that stuff. But when I'm home and I'm in my routine, you know, and then you know, a nice long sauna afterward, right? It's a long process. So that's why I get up early. Running, you know, I run slow, right? So I can run far, you know, a 12 mile run now is 2 hours for me. You know, so I do that, nice long sauna. And then, you know, nutrition wise, I get in my office and we have practice at 8:30. So, I make sure I get here and I have at least an hour to unwind, get ready for practice, eat a bowl of oatmeal. I have a couple of bowls of oatmeal, right? Knock back a bunch of fluids, go to practice. Usually it's 8:30 to 10:30, 8:30 to 11, right? Shower up, office all day. And then, you know, at some point I'm going to get another workout in. You know, we usually, you know, the days we run and lift, I go down there and mess around with the team and get a little, when they're lifting, I'll get a walk on the treadmill or do something like that. You know, and then you gotta throughout the day, I find time to read, right? And so I don't read every day, but if I have time in the office at, you know, 20 minutes, I try to set aside to read a chapter of a book or read something online or read that, you know, and then whenever the day is over, right? I don't have a set time when I go home. It's whenever the day is over for me, you know, in the office, I go home and I've really enjoyed, you know, I'm an empty nester now. So it's just my wife and I every night. And we, you know, we have dinner and, you know, work's never over. We always talk about that. Reader and I always talk about that. That's a big problem we have. But it also, another, to answer your question, it could be a good habit, is we can't ever shut it down. You know what I mean? It's, we go home and I make my list to do for the next day, my phone calls I got to make, who we got to do this, where are we recruiting, right? It never shuts down. And then the one thing I love now is I got a hot tub a couple months ago at the house, and that's kind of been my, my shutdown now. I get out there late at night. It's dark. It's awesome. You know, I sit out there and I collect my thoughts before bed, and that's usually, that's about a perfect day for me right there.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. So sounds like a good day to me too, right there. So, all right. Couple of just quick questions here as we get ready to wrap up. All right. And Coach Reeder's probably on there, but who's on your favorites on your phone or on your speed dial? Just those couple people that, man, you need something, you know that they're going to be there right away.
Yeah. That's my mom, dad, wife, and two daughters for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All righty. You can answer one of these. You can answer all three, expound upon them as much as you want. Tell me about a hero, a highlight, or a hardship in your life. Hero, highlight, hardship.
Hero, highlight, or hardship. Let's go with hardship. And I just had one, right? Just had a dog. I mean, I know this is not, you know, I don't know what you guys think of that, but you know, I just had a dog that, was very hard. I put down a couple of dogs in my life, you know, when they got old and bad hips and sick and cancer and all that stuff, where it was an okay to say goodbye to them. But I had just had a dog 15 months old that, was my guy and had some mental issues and things like that, and little tumor on his brain, and, you know, would flip from being a really personable dog to a really aggressive, mean dog. And I understood it was time to put him down, right? Because he was sick. But the effect that dog had on my daughters, he loved those girls more than anything. And to see the effect that a dog had on my kids, my daughters, in 15 months was one of the hardest things I had to go through. You know what I mean? The how upset, right, they did, and the things that they wanted to do to be able to try to keep, right? The dog never, ever freaked out on my daughters, right? He's freaked out on everybody, you know, and got aggressive and this and that, little kids, everybody. But with those two, he didn't do anything. So it was very, very hard. It was very, very hard. You know, when we had to call him home from college and say, it's time, we're, you know, you get one last night with him. And that was tough. And it just happened recently. So it's still something was fresh in my mind.
Yeah, that is tough, man. I absolutely love animals. And I tell you what, man, you lose a dog, it's crazy. People say it's like losing a family member. And
yeah, and you think that when you really lose one, it's, you've had 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 years with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we had 15 months with this guy. And, you know, I always told my wife after our, we had put down one of my last dogs, and I said, I will never get a dog again, because we just spent 11 years with this guy, and it's not worth that one day you have to walk in that vet and say goodbye to him. It's not worth that one day to have him for those 11, in my eyes, you know. Yeah. And what did we do? We went out and got one, and 15 months later, it turned out to be one of the worst days again.
Yeah, that's tough. All right, if you could, and this is general, but if you could just narrow it down, some of the best advice you've ever been given, and maybe it's from a coach, maybe it was from a parent, whatever, what's a really good piece of advice that you think has just stuck with you?
I like the advice, you work harder on Friday and Mondays than any other day of the week, because most everybody wants a 3-day weekend. You know, if you take a day off of work, it's probably a Friday or a Monday, so you can have that Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I was told Friday and Monday should be work days, hard. You should, you know, if you think you work hard Tuesday, work harder Monday and Friday, you'll get double the edge on somebody.
Very good. Very good. Coach Ben Newman, he does mindset training for Alabama, K-State, mm-hmm. Pembroke, and he has a saying, champions create distance on Fridays.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's absolute true. So great advice, Coach. All right. Where can people follow you on social media? And I'll make sure I put these links down in our show notes to your wrestling program and everything, but where can we follow?
Yeah, I'm all over it. I got it all right. I don't even know how to say half the things on social. I don't even know what I got, but Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, I got all that stuff. Badger Wrestling's on Twitter. You know, I'm lucky I've got two daughters that are, you know, in college that know, you know, keep me straight on that stuff and know how to manage all my accounts. But yeah, we're all over the place. All the main ones.
Okay. And again, I'll put those in the show notes so people can get on. They can follow you. They can follow your program and keep up with it. So, well, Coach awesome. Bono, thank you so much for being on, man. I appreciate it. It's an honor.
All right, brother. I really appreciate you, man. I respect what you're doing too. You're awesome. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right, everybody. It's been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. May God bless you, smile upon you, and give you peace. Till next time, we're out. Hey, before you go, I just want to tell you thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Coach P's Perspective. And then a couple things that I would ask. One is hit the subscribe button. That way, every single time a new episode comes out, man, as soon as you open up your podcast app, it is right there, ready to roll. You can listen to a new one. The second is, if you would, and we earned it, give us a 5-star review, a quick written review. Especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, that's great. You know, one of the ultimate goals is to grow this show and to positively impact as many people as possible, and that helps. And then lastly, jump over to lanefrostbrand.com. Visit my friends over there. You know, this is an incredible company, family-owned, operated, honoring the late, great Lane Frost, who is, a former rodeo champion, was one of my idols growing up. And this is one of my absolute favorite companies. So if you need ball caps, t-shirts, all kinds of apparel, again, go over to lanefrostbrand.com and check them out. Thank you guys again. Much love and God bless.
Podcast complete. Now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins. Tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step. CSL rep. Pop, lock, and rock. Coach P, who never stops.